Before we begin with Tosfos, I just have to deal with the matter of calendar for a moment, for a few minutes. There is a common practice of referring to this as the month of Cheshvan. But I have some disappointing news. For those of you who haven't heard my rant before, there is no Chodesh Cheshvan. There is a Chodesh known in the Hebrew calendar. Mar Cheshvan. If you go back to the printed editions of the Mishnah, forget the manuscripts, and the Gemara, you won't find a Chodesh called Cheshvan. I challenge you to take your Bar Ilan and search for the word Cheshvan Vavnun with prefixes in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi and the Mishnah, and you will, I believe, come up with only a couple of occurrences of the Yerushalmi of the word of the Cheshvan, and we are Chosheish for. But you won't find any name of the month, because the name of the month is now Cheshvan, is Mar Cheshvan. How did Mar Cheshvan come to be? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, well, some of you have told us, some of you have been taught, I should say, that it's called Mar Cheshvan because Mar Cheshvan has no Yamim Tovim in it. So either because it's bitter, because it's either called bitter, or we want to make it feel good, so we call it Mar Cheshvan. So we, to quote Ibn Ezra in the Tzachdam to the Torah, that's a time which is Tov Latinokos, but of course in a rational sense it's utter nonsense, because given your choice, instead of being Mar Cheshvan, you would rather have been Chodesh Menachem Av, right, Av, because that's a great month to be. Or Chodesh Tammuz, which not only was a rotten month, but also was named after an Avodah Zarah. So instead, you're bitter because you're Mar Cheshvan. So there's a third interpretation I actually saw. I forget how recent it was that because the word mar can refer to a drop. Hein goyim kimar midli, a drop in the bucket. And Mar Cheshvan is the month of the rains, therefore it's called Mar Cheshvan. Like vayored lachem moreh umalkosh varishon. It's very nice, but that's also not correct. The Yerushalmi tells us in Rosh Hashanah that Shmos Chadashim alu imar mibara, that the months, the names of our months in the Torah, they're called by the number. In Tanakh, you have Yerach Esanim, you have Chodesh Bul and Chodesh Ziv. Yerach Esanim is Tishrei, Chodesh Ziv is Iyar, and Yerach Bul, I think, is Mar Cheshvan, actually. But we don't have the names that we know of, which is, you know, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei, Mar Cheshvan, Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Adar. Those names are originally Akkadian names that they brought back with them from the first exile in Babel. And actually, one of the things that happens commonly in the name switch is you get a switching of letters. So for example, the Akkadian name for Chodesh Kislev is Kislimu, and Chodesh Sivan is Simanu. The Vav and the Mem are both letters that are formed by the lips, the Vav, the Beis, the Mem, labial letters, and sometimes they switch. And in this particular case, we get a double switch for reasons we're not sure, but this was originally Warach, Shamnu, where you get a double switch, Vamem, this way, which is expected. This one is not as expected. And it turns out it's Varach Shamnu, which is the same thing as Yerach Shmini. It means the eighth month. Sounds amazing. It's one word. And the Yemenite pronunciation is, I believe, Marach Shwan. Unlike us, when you say it correctly, in our vocalization, we say Mar Cheshvan. So their pronunciation actually reflects the fact that the words broke between each of the three letters, not Mar Cheshvan, but Mar Cheshvan. It's also interesting, something that Professor Moshe Barasher pointed out to us in a class many years ago, which is that the calling Mar Cheshvan, the eighth month, suggests that the year begins, in fact, in Nisan. The Chodesh Tishrei is... the word sharei in Aramaic means to begin, which suggests that Chodesh Tishrei is the first month, which in fact these two names, so the Tishrei is the first, or Nisan is the first, which is reflected in Mar Cheshvan, the eighth month name, so those are both actually true. We know that both within tradition, Mishnayos and Rosh Hashanah, and Mishnayos and Braisos, that there's Rosh Hashanah l'malachim of Tishrei, and there's Rosh Hashanah l'malachim of Nisan. Also, those correspond to the agricultural, which is the beginning of the agricultural year is Tishrei, and the beginning of the military year is Nisan, when the rains have stopped and the ground is dry enough to go on military expeditions. So in fact, this particular name of the month reflects one of the two ways of counting the months of the year. Ellie?
Does the shift in labial consonants occur in the V sound or only in the W sound, the W?
Both of them are labials, W and V. They're both formed by the lips. Either way, so I don't know that that means anything. Look, we do know that the original V, originally the V was pronounced as a W rather than as a V. One of the things, one of the observations I make about the calendar very quickly is that there are 12 months in the Hebrew calendar, except that this year we add a 13th month. None of you obviously had this experience because it would be impossible, but if you were to talk to any of the Rosh Yeshiva, roughly in my age cohort, who went to MTA, they will all remember Rabbi Cohn, Rabbi Yitzhak Cohn, who was my Rebbe in ninth grade, you know, screaming out loud on Rosh Chodesh in a year like this, Ul Chaporas Posha. In the Elokeinu Lekeinu Seinu, we say Chadesh Aleres Hoshzeh L'Tovav L'Brachah L'Sasam L'Simcha L'Yishuon HaChamol Parnas Halachah L'Chaim L'Sholom L'Chila Seiru Slicha Savon. And in the leap year, we add Ul Chaporas Posha. We add a 13th. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this is we only add it starting now in Mar Cheshvan, and we will stop doing it when the year ends in Adar Sheni. I've never seen the question explicitly addressed in sources why, but I'm pretty sure I know the reason for that, which is the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the Beis Din cannot declare the leap year before Chodesh Tishrei. Even though the leap year began with last Nisan, and it's actually the last month that's added on, because Beis Din cannot be Ma'aber the Shana, and if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara says it's not even Chal if the Ma'aber before Tishrei, which presents a problem for the Ramban Shita, the Ramban, in his Hasagos to the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs, where the Rambam explains, however he explains, however Kiddush HaChodesh works. The Ramban says, no, Hillel HaSheni was Mekadesh, all the Rosh Hashanim and all the Ibur Shanim from his day until Yemos HaMashiach, and that's why our calendar still works. The Ramban knows, he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and somehow he just says, yeah, but that's really, you know, if you have no choice, you can ignore the Gemara, except that the Gemara sounds like it's not Chal B'Di'eved. But the reason we don't say, start saying, Ul Chaparas Pasha until after Tishrei, we don't obviously get to do it on Rosh Hashanah, because there's no explicit acknowledgement by name of Rosh Hashanah as Rosh Chodesh, even though it is Rosh Chodesh, and you should be aware in our Nusach that there's actually Lesa Machlokas, Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Meshulam, of Lunel, I have a lot of machlokos, but there was a machlokos about whether you say Ushnei Sirim L'chaper, because Rabbeinu Meshulam claimed that you don't mention your Mechase the Chodesh, Tikov HaChodesh HaKesel Yom Chagenu, where Mechase the Chodesh, the mention of the Sayer Chatas of Rosh Chodesh, that Ola we mention, but the Sayer Chatas of Rosh Chodesh, is it mentioned in the Pasuk Milvado Lasa Chodesh Yom Chasa, but Lasa Milhasa, it does the same thing about the Chatas HaChodesh. So Rabbeinu Meshulam says, therefore we don't mention in davening. Rabbeinu Tam said we should, and we do, and we say Ushnei Sirim L'chaper. One's the Sar Musafim Rosh Hashanah, one's the Sar Musafim of Rosh Chodesh. Anyway, our practice starting Rosh Chodesh, Mar Cheshvan, is actually to start saying L'chaparas Pasha, because that's the first month that Beis Din already could have been Ma'aber L'shana. Ellie? What's that?
Why is he
right? Well, I think it's just because the Gemara says Ezech Chag Shehachodesh Miskasebo. So the question is, what does that word mean? So Rabbeinu Meshulam says it's the Chodesh on which the Chatas at least is covered up. Yeah, it's not because there's any good logical. I mean, I'm sure somebody's going to give drush as to why you want to cover it up, but and you can state it what you want. But what's motivating him is the formulation of the Mara. Tikkun b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagenu eze chag shachodesh miskasabo and homer zeh Rosh Hashanah. Okay, Gabe, any question? No. Okay. All right. There's no questions. The rant is over. Please do not say chodesh cheshvan. When we write an ksuba, we can discuss whether it passes a ksuba, but a ksuba and a get certainly are written as mar cheshvan. In fact, when we write things today, is actually written as Shloshim, if you were getting married right now, we would write the Shloshim Yom L'Chodesh Tishrei Shehu Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. For some reason, tomorrow we would just write Be'echa L'Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. But it is Chodesh Mar Cheshvan. Should you come back to this institution in 50 years or 40 years from now and see an old man hunched over, going out crossing things off the signs at the Bimar Cheshvan, and correcting him, that would probably be me having gone out of my mind. Anyway. All right. So that's on the lighter side. So let's now take a back to our Tosis that we had started and see if we can try to at least, I'd like to see if we can do Tosis and maybe the Ramban to try to sort of set things up for a finale, which, well, would have to be next week, unfortunately, but let's see where we can go. One thing I want to point out in advance, which I'm not going to address, although I thank Ephraim for giving me a hard time in Seder today, in a way that you're supposed to give me a hard time in Seder, which is there is something mildly, not intractable, but difficult between the two Gemaras that we didn't really dwell upon. Our Gemara suggested in the Maskana that the difference between the case of Arba and the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor is that in one case there is Dror D'Mamon Lamar and Dror D'Mamon Lamar, but in the other case, Idamar Lav Damar, Idamar Lav Damar. Meaning in the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor, each has Dror D'Mamon, whatever that means. But in the case of the Arba, it's either his, if it's his, it's not his. If it's his, it's not his. Forgetting about how you want to explain that for the moment, just looking at the language, when you look at the Gemara Bava Metzia, so the Gemara Bava Metzia, which we, I don't know if you even read this, we might have skipped over this. I don't think we did. The Gemara Bava Metzia suggests that there's a problem with Sumchus and the Chachamim. A Sumchus and the Mishnah in Bava Metzia. The Gemara suggested Sumchus holds Mamon Hamutal Basafek Yachloku without a Shvuah. Without a Shvuah. They divide it up. And the Mishnah says, Shnayim Ochsim Batalis, Yachloku Bishvuah. So the Gemara first suggested that if Sumchus only says Yachloku, when it comes to Shema Veshema, each one is towing Shema, so there's no Kasha. The Mishnah is talking about Bari Bari, each one has to take a Shvuah. Shema Shema, we don't impose a Shvuah upon them. Probably because what are they going to swear to? They're going to swear to maybe it's my ego. It's a kind of strange shvuah. There are shvuahs we take. There are shvuahs in halacha that are taken in the absence of knowledge. For example, if two men, one Reuven owes Shimon money, and then. Reuven dies. And then Shimon dies. So now Shimon's Yorshim want to collect from Reuven's Yorshim. So the problem is that you can't be collect from Nichsei Yorshim, or Nichsei Yisomim, we spoke about this in Bekiyas, without a Shvuah. There's only one problem. How are the Yorshim of Shimon going to take a Shvuah that Shimon never received the money back? They have no idea, right? Because all of us know exactly what's going on with our parents' finances, right? That they would know. So the Gemara says the shvuah that they take is shvuah shelo pikdanu abaklun, that our father didn't tell us anything about this loan being paid back. So you can have a shvuah that's taken on, you know, an absence of knowledge. But even there, it's about a definite fact, right? My father did not tell us anything about this. Here, what are you going to take a shvuah on? You're going to take a shvuah that I don't know for sure that it's yours. And that's kind of a strange shvuah to take. You can take a shvuah that maybe it's mine. Okay, we don't need you to take a shvuah for that. But then the Gemara says, that would be the answer. Except that there's an Amora who holds, and I mentioned this in Shir yesterday, there's an Amora who holds that Sumchus holds a shita even by Bari Bari. Even if Eitan swears that the cow gave birth when it was still in his Rishus. And I swear that the cow gave birth when it was in my rishus. I mean, I didn't before I swear. I know for sure. He knows for sure. I'm not speculating. I know. I saw it with my own two eyes. So if Sumchus even said in a case like that, Yachlok B'Lushvah, the Gemara says, what is the difference between that and our Mishnah, Shnayim Ochsim B'Talis? Because they're both Bari Ubari. In the Mishnah, it's Cholkim B'Shvah. In Sumchus's case, it's Cholkim B'Lishvah. So the Gemara makes a suggestion that the difference between the two cases is whether there's Dror or the Mamon or not. And once again, they label the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor is there's Dror or the Mamon. But the case of Shnayim Ochsim, there's no Dror or the Mamon. Right? So Rashi said, that's where Rashi was Machadesh Dror or the Mamon, there means no Chisaron Mamon. Okay, whatever it means. But then the Gemara turns around and says, wait, that's backwards. If in the case of machlif par b'chamor, when there is drara de mamona, each has drara de mamona, and then the Gemara says, I should really read it to you. The Gemara says, "Umahosam v'ika dror de mamona lamar v'ika dror de mamona lamar v'ika lameimar kula lamar v'ika lameimar kula lamar." Now, it's not the exact same words, but it sounds awful lot like thing. Idamar lav demar, ilav demar, idamar lav demar. And so the Gemara here is describing that within Machlat Parah B'Chamor. In Vava Vasra, it said the exact opposite. It said that in the case of Arba, Idamar lav demar, Idamar lav demar, but that wouldn't be true by Para. So here the Gemara continues and says, if in that case, Sumcha said, Mamon Hamuta Basafik is Chokim Beloshua, here that neither one has Dror de Mamona, because it could be both of theirs, the Mitzia, the Talis, could be both of theirs, certainly you shouldn't have to take a Shua. And the Gemara says, you're right, in principle you're correct, and this Shua is a special Takana Saham. So there's something very, the Gemara is consistent in its attributing Dror de Mamona being a factor for Machlat Parah B'Chamor in both Gemaras, but it seems to give a very, it's not the same language, and it's, the answer may lie in that. We're not going to explore that now. That's if you want to go further exploration. A further exploration. But the Gemara here sounds like, well, really, it's either Ika Lamemar, Kul Lamar, Ika Kulmar, that it belongs to one or the other. Right? Whereas in Bava Basra, that terminology sounds like it's being used for the other case, not for Machlat Parah B'Chamor. So that's one question that you might want to explore. I'm not going to go further on that. I want to add one more nekuda, which I spent a lot of time with Ephraim, but then Gabe and Nisim were actually helpful in pushing me to come up with the answer. It was a question I was really bothered with in Shir yesterday that you should have been bothered with, which is, and you didn't hear this yet, Ephraim, I raised the question of Bava Basra. There's a machlokas hamarayim, whether Sumcha said yachloku even by Bari Ubari or only by Shana Oshana. So I asked, which position is the Gemara in Bava Basra assuming, if it's assuming one or the other? And I suggested it didn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense that the Gemara in Bava Basra, which posed a contradiction between Rav Nachman's Arba, where you say Kol De'Olam Gavar, and Machlat Parah B'Chamor, where in principle you say Yachloku. So the question is, why wouldn't you treat them consistently? So if the case of Machlat Parah B'Chamor is a Shema Ushema, the answer is simple. This is what I said in Shia yesterday. The answer is simple, which is, why does Kol De'Olam Gavar work? It works because one of them knows the truth and the other one knows the truth. And the person who knows the truth is going to fight harder. And the person who doesn't know the truth isn't going to fight so hard which doesn't belong to him. And not only that, but he knows it's not his. So why bother fighting so hard if at the end of the day he may end up coming back with witnesses or proof? So I fought a bloody fight to win nothing. We might call it a certain kind of a Pyrrhic victory. Because tomorrow, good, I won this bruising battle. I walk away all bruised and I have the boat. And then tomorrow, he brings me he finally found his shtar indicating he owns the boat, or, you know, his registration document. So I got all bruised up in this fight and I end up losing the boat. So, but if it's Shema, that's Kol De'Olam Gavar makes sense by Abba. But when it comes to Machlat Parah B'Chamor, if it's a case of only Shema B'Shema, it's not easy to fight for something that you don't really believe in. In the sense that you don't know that it's true. So it doesn't make sense to say Kol De'Olam Gavar. I could easily understand why you'd say Yachloku there, because Kol De'Olam Gavar is not going to get you to the truth. Whereas in a case where they're Bari Ubari, Kol De'Olam Gavar will get you to the truth. That was the question I asked yesterday in Shir. So I think that the answer might be, that came up in our discussion, was remember that there are two angles to Kol De'Olam Gavar. There's the fact that the guy who really owns the boat is going to fight really hard because he knows it's his. And that element is absent here. But there's also an element that the guy who knows he doesn't own the boat is not going to fight hard because he figures tomorrow someone's going to come, the other guy's going to find the raya, and he's going to lose the boat anyway. But by machlif par b'chamor, when they're both shema v'shema, you're never going to find out. Nobody knows. That's why they're shema v'shema. Nobody was around the para when the para gave birth. So yes, I don't have the incentive to fight because I know that it's mine, but I do have an incentive to fight because I know if I win the first battle, he's not going to be able to take it away from me. And I should add in here one nekuda. It's an achlokas harishonim, but I think the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rush. The Torah quotes only the Rush. The Rush says in Kol Da'alam Gavar, it's a one-round match. If you lose the first round, you're out. In other words, if I manage to grab it out of Eitan's hands, I win. He can't grab it again. If he grabs it again and I say, he stole mine, I win. If I have witnesses to it, right? So according to that position, for sure, there's actually, even though I don't know for sure that the Vlad belongs to me, I don't know for sure, but there is a kind of incentive to try to wrestle it, to win the wrestling match. Because if I win the wrestling match, it's over. You're never going to bring a raya against me. And that may be why, one second, that may be why the Gemara can actually work, even if it's Shema v'Shema here. Because I think Gabe and Nissen pointed out to me, there's a line in Tosos, not explicit, but on Lama Dalam Beis, where it certainly sounds like they hold it's talking about a Shema v'Shema case. Jeremy? He doesn't explicitly talk about it because the case, that issue, nobody that I've seen explicitly raises the question. The Rishonim could have asked, but I haven't seen anybody ask. Here, in the case on Lamed Ham and Aleph, when they quote the Amach Lefar B'Chamor, nobody here talks about it's Sumchus. Tosus does say this is obviously Sumchus's position Yachloku. But he explains, Tosus, the bottom Tosus on Lamed Ham and Al, it's not that the Gemara is passing like Sumchus, it's that the Chachamim would agree in principle, if not for the Cheskas Marakama. If you could find a case where there was no Marakama, the Chachamim would agree Yachloku in such a case. But Tosus never here explores, okay, well, which way is this Gemara working? Bari Bari Shema Shema, the way the Gemara in Bava Metzia does. Right? The Gemara in Bava Metzia in the opening Sugya explicitly asks, works through whether you're holding Shema Shema or even Bari Bari. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah, and I, as far as I know, I didn't go through the Shulchan Aruch, I looked through it very quickly. They don't talk about this issue. They don't talk, when they quote Hamach Lefar B'Chamor, which I think is Simin Kuf Lamed Tes, they don't even talk about, because we don't paskin like Sumchus, so the din is the same regardless. There's their assumption.
But if there's only one round of fighting, even for Bari Bari, so then the whole proof of like, why would the person who doesn't rightfully belong to fight sort of falls apart?
No. So going back to the Arba case, which I believe is in, that's Kuf Lamed Tes. Kuf Lamed Tes is Shnei Mochsin, and when they're Mochzakim, and Kuf Lamed Tes is they're not Mochzakim. The whole framing in Shulchan Aruch is the first Teretz of Tosos. So when they talk about Hu Arba, they just say, whoever grabs first, that's the end. Okay, so you have a lot of incentive, certainly if you know it's yours, you have a lot of incentive to try to claim it, right? Because not only do you know you're right, but you also don't want to lose, because then you won't be able to grab it again. Okay, Eli Melech.
Understanding it that way, that same case of Hamach with Paro Hamor is that of Lekha Lame Kamalam
also? Is a case of?
Lekha Lame Kamalam also?
Yeah, I think so.
So then, if that's the case, then why does the Gemara only need to go into Gerud Vamoda for Shmuel?
So I suspect, by the way, for that reason, well, you have two paths to go down here. I mean, that may be why, by the way, the Rishonim all reject this approach but Rashbam notes, some wanted to say that the Kasha was not against Rav Nachman, was between Shmuel, Shuda and Yachloku. In other words, if Shmuel says Shuda in his case of Shnei Shtaros, yet the Mishnah says Yachloku. So that may be why they may motivate to do so. I think that the real answer to the question is that the Gemara could have answered that way, but they wanted to go down this other path. In other words, it's called the Litamech. I mean, it's a longer discussion, but I suspect that's what's going on here. By Shnei Shteres HaYetzim Yom Echad, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine that that's any more Lekam Lekam Nilsa than the Machat Par B'chamo when both guys are tining Shema. You know, now could you say it is, you're going to, if you're right that really it's Ikal Lekam Nilsa or more Ikal Lekam Nilsa, so then you're going to say, well, then once again, the question, you know, comes back, which is Shema Shema doesn't make any sense to pose as a stira. So I would just say that maybe there may be one way of doing it, but the simplest way is saying Echonami, the Gemara could have said that, but it wanted to present this other piece of logic as well. So it could have said, oh, end of discussion, Lekam Lekam Nilsa. Gabe and then Ephraim.
Doesn't the Baal already address this question though?
Which one?
Baal explains that even if you would bring
aid
in the
kitchen,
it wouldn't help.
So the problem with the Rashba is it's against the Gemara. The Rashba points this out. It's against the Feirush. I mean, I noted this. I think I was talking about this issue before the Chagim. But my question, Rashba points out that Rashba is completely against the Gemara Ksubas. In other words, the Gemara Ksubas says that that if you hold like Shmuel, then Eide Chasima, the Eide Mesira Karti, like Rav Lazar, then if Eidim came, if Edom knew, then for sure whoever got it first would get it. And if you hold like Rav, it's not a the Gemara didn't ask the question here, because definitionally they're kone at the same time because they dechasima karti, and it's only when it's muchach mitoch hashtar. So I know the Rashbam says that. All the Rashbam, what the Rashbam there is doing, what all the other Rishonim disagree with the Rashbam are saying is that lekem lemekam la milsa is not mean that it's actually impossible. It just means it's improbable. So what you could, by the way, say here, now you're pushing in this direction, Elimelech, the other way to be mitareitz is to say in Echonami that the threshold of Ika Lemeikam Ala the Milsa is met. In other words, the Shnei Shtaros is so unlikely because Adam paid no attention to the time. So it's not impossible. It's not that it's unknowable, or that if we knew it, it wouldn't have an effect, but it's almost certainly not going to be revealed. You could say that when it comes to the par v'chamor, that it's enough to be considered ikal mekel nebilsa, more than shnei shtaros, but it's still not so probable, right? There's a place we draw the line. And because it's not so probable, psychologically speaking, the person figures, if I grab it, he won't be able to get it back, because he's not likely to be able to bring any rayas. I'm not sure if you might be able to. I'm not sure if that will work, but that's the other way. We have to sort of think it through. No. Where are you looking? He does say. It's Ika Lameka Mala de Milsa. Right, you're correct. So you are right. For him, you can easily say that. That's correct. But then this turrets won't work also. It could still work. It could still work according to Rashbam. In other words, it's possible that for him, it is categorically impossible by Shnei Shteres because it doesn't matter. There's no possible evidence could possibly, you know, mean anything. But by Par V'Chamor, it's possible that that someone will come. But I would say that if they're Shema or Shema in the first place, it means they really don't know. It's one thing when you know what happened. When you know what happened, you're going to try to bring whatever proof to what happened is. If you don't even know what happened, it's kind of like you know where to start. Well, I'm going to go hunting down Aiden that I don't know exists because it might not even be true what I'm saying. So even for the Rashbam, you could still say that either Ikon the Mekam Al-Dinosa, it's still improbable enough that it gives me the incentive, both sides the incentive to say, hey, if I win the tug of war on round one, he's never going to be able to dislodge me because there is no tug of war round two, and he's not likely to be able to bring a riot. It's possible, but not likely. In fact, I think this works easier for the Rashbam than it does for the other Rishonim. You don't have to make fine chilukim of how probable. Yeah. No. What do you mean? In that Dibur Maskil? Well, we know that the Rishus, if we know whose Rishus the par was in when the baby was born, we know who it belongs to. In other words, it was in my Rishus until we made the Kenyan. It was in your Rishus after we made the Kenyan. That's all he means. He doesn't mean Rishus, the physical Rishus. He means ownership. And that changes with the Kenyan. Gabe, did you have a question, or did I ask? Ephraim? You're right. Ephraim's right. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Because it's still, at the end of the day, if the purpose of Kol Da'alam Gavar is to actually get the right outcome, so not just that people, that the person who will win is the one who really is entitled to it. So, but if the purpose is actually the right outcome, then it doesn't even make sense in the context of Shema, because nobody knows what the right outcome is. So how can the psychology of either the parties involved have any relevance to the right outcome? Yeah. Okay. It was a nice try. Well, that's the game. Sorry. So we're back to the question. I don't understand how nobody comments in the Rishonim about this. It would seem to be an obvious question. Do you have an answer, Ephraim? I know you were pushing earlier, but you don't.
Well, I even looking at the rush, I'm not convinced that he really believes that the principal reason why you called on the guard is to say that this will show us who's right. It's just that principally we're sort of letting it go, and then Caldwell might be slightly better than other options because in some cases you get this advantage. But this is it's very much a side point.
All right. You have to basically say Kol Da'alam Gvar is just, we don't want any involvement, so two of you know. Go fight or come to some shara.
Or some kind of metaphysical intervention that's going to help that, but yeah.
Seems unlikely. Ellie, did you have a question? Oh, you were the one with the question. Yeah, did your question over? Okay. All right. So I don't have anything more to say about the Bari and Shema, but I would like to now figure out where the Rishonim come out, and I want to understand what the Machlokas is between the Ramban, the position the Ramban adopts, and the first position in Tosfos, not the Rivah. I mean, it might be the first two Deos in Tosfos. I would like to understand what's going on here. So, let's begin with, we read the beginning of Tosfos. I think we read the first day in Tosfos. And then we get to the Rivah. Who would like to read for me? Gabe?
So for the fact that going by Matir compares the case of Shan Oxim to the case of the Shar, Lam Zayin, as Machlok, but if you see, it must be that by Shan Oxim.
And well, Shar is specifically not the Machlok, it is, but Shar is whose position?
The Rabbanan.
The Rabbanan's position. Okay. So.
The Shan Oxim, we would say Machlok, even if they are Moksa, even if they are okay.
Okay, so the lav dafka.
We
stay home. So now the question comes back, right? You can't say the difference between arba and talis is whether they're mufsakim, because you're saying it doesn't make a difference by talis, even if they weren't mufsakim talis, even if the talis was sitting on the floor there and the two of you were arguing that the base it belongs to me, they're not oxen, you would still say yachlok. So why is that different than the boat? So he says. So the Gemara there had suggested that for Rabbi Yosef, the difference between the case of the 300 zuz that they were mafkid, that Rabbi Yosef said Akol Yehi Munach Acher Yavo Eliyahu. So that's a case, and Rabbi Yosef specifically punished. He instituted that neither one gets even 100. Even though they're both definitely entitled to 100, because there's a Ramai, Mahifsa Ramai. So there, there's a Vaday Ramai, says the Gemara. But in Shnayim Oxen, there's not Vaday Ramai, because maybe both of them picked it up at the same time. Both of them think that they own the whole thing. Both of them actually own half of it. But neither one is lying. And they're both correct when they say Ani Mitzasiya. Right? Kula Shali is just their interpretation. It's not their recitation of the facts. Now, okay, go ahead, but.
Even the Igramai, Loyaflaku.
Okay, so now, so he says that by Arba, there's definitely Ramai, and the way the Ramban explains, it's not a case where both just say, the boat is mine, because maybe if they're both claiming they bought the boat from the previous owner, then maybe they did both buy the boat from the previous owner. We have the case in Bava Metzia of Mekach HaMemkach, where we say it's possible that he was Nisrasa L'Shneim, and he took money from both of them. And that, so just Hai Arva Didi, in itself doesn't mean there's Vada Ikaramai. But the Ramban says, Mistama, that's what the Gemara means. It means, I built the boat, just as when the Gemara says at the end, Zemar Shalavosai, Shalavosai, the pastress is, that Vada Ikaramai, because either it was your father's or my father's. He came to my hands and inherits, he your hands and inherits. Those can't both have happened. Let's put it that way. So, he says that, that if the, in our case is Vada Ramai. Ah, so then he says, so now let's go back to the case of Shnayim Shifkidu, the 300 tools. So he says, go ahead. Okay, that's the end of the presentation of the Riva Shita. And then now Tosus, without skipping a beat, is going to start to attack him. But he says that the case of mana, you could even say the mana hashlishi, where there's vada ika ramai, and we say yehimuna hashyavina. Why don't we say kol dalim gavar? The answer is because you only say kol dalim gavar when we don't have to get involved. When the basin wasn't toface, but if the basin was toface, or someone else is omid, the tapas veomid, right? The nifkad is already holding on to it. He was given it properly. They can't put it out into the public forum to have, you know, a wrestling match over it, because it might end up achieving the wrong result, and then they are responsible. Because once it's in our hands, once it's in Basin's hands, once it's in Nifkat's hands, you can't do a proper hashava. Now, no one's, in the case of Nifkat, he certainly, Basin might have been wrong for seizing it. But the Nifkat certainly didn't do anything wrong, because he didn't seize it. It was given to him to keep. And therefore, he can't throw it out into the Rishus Harabim and say, okay, you guys can go fight over it, because maybe he has a responsibility to return it to the rightful owner, which he can't do right now because he doesn't know who the rightful owner is. But for him to put it out in the Rishus Harabim and then these two guys fight over it, he may now actively be responsible for the wrong person getting it. So that's like, Itafsina, no matkinan, that's what the Riva says. So the case of the Mishra Shvayim Ochsin, there's no Vada Ramai. Case of Arba, there's Vada Ramai. So Yachloku versus Kol Dalim Gavar. And then the case of the Manashlishi should have been Kol Dalim Gavar, but it's like a case where they were Tofes already. Now, what emerges from the Riva Shita without reading anything further? And this is the Ramban Shita. Something very, very important emerges. What is that? Gabe? Now that's Tosus's, I don't want to say quibble. That's his kasha on the Riva. But there's a more fundamental point that should emerge. Let's say we paskin itafsina no mafkina. What should we do? We do paskin. Okay. Now, so you're right. It doesn't solve everything in the Shafra Taya but for the moment, we can put that aside. Something very practical emerges. What's that? I mean, the Ramban, Rashi says it, and Ramban says it in Bava Metzia. And probably says it here too. Yeah?
We will maybe say that's close to his talis, right?
So if two people are holding a talis, and each one claims that they wove the talis themselves, ani aragtiha. So the Riva would say that you don't say Yachloku. You say, Rashi says, Yehemuna Hashayavu Eliyahu. And what would the Riva say here? What do you think the Riva would say? Shnayim Ochsen Betala, Zelmer Ani Araktiya, Vezelmer Ani Araktiya. Probably called Dalim Gavar. Right, because it's not like there's a third party that's, you know, tafus on it, the nifkat of the basin. So basically, it's vada ikaramai, and being mosak is irrelevant for the rivari. The Tosis is quite here. When you're mosak, you say achlagus. Totally irrelevant. There's vade ramai. So the answer is, have a nice day, folks. Have a nice life. You know, see you in the next world. And you go fight over it. It's not our problem. Kol dalam gavar. So that's what would emerge from the position of the riva. So we're going to read on, but I'm going to already ask the question now. What's going on here? What's the nekudas ha-machlokas fundamentally? I mean, the machlokas is how to resolve two gemaras that don't seem to be in conversation with one another. Right? Our gemara doesn't ask the kasha from Shnayim Ochsin and give a teretz. And the gemara in Shnayim Ochsin doesn't ask a kasha from our gemara of Arba and give a teretz. Okay. So the problem is they're not in conversation with one another. So in order to create and end the conversation very quickly, so they both come up with resolutions. But what is driving them? What is unsatisfactory for the Ramban and for the Riva with the approach of Rabbeinu Hanano and many others? They say, Rabbeinu Hanano and many others say, that if you're mosak on it, we don't care about whether there is a Ramai or not. We don't care whether there's a Ramai. If you're mosak on it, you would say Yachloku. If you're not mosak on it, you say Kol Da'olam Gavar. Now, there's one little piece that Tosas hasn't explained, which we explained already. I thought I mentioned this this year, and Tosas does sort of say it incidentally later in our Tosas. According to the Maskana of Tosas, how do you deal with the fact that when they are firstly, when you have the Mana Hashlishi, so Tosas asked the question, how if ochazin, if being mosak is the primary difference, so why does the Gemara ask Akasha from Shnayim ochazin to the Mana Hashlishi? They're not ochazin in the Mana Hashlishi. So Tosas gave a teretz and said, no. Tosas said that when it's in the hands of the Nifkat, it's like they're both holding it, because he's holding it for them. He's holding it for one of them. So the question Tosas did not address is, okay, so when he's, what should the din be then in the Mana Hashlishi? If the Mana Hashlishi is as if they're Shnayim Ochsin, what should the din be? Yachloku, like Shnayim Ochsin Betalas. Tosas didn't address that question yet. He does later in the Tosas, Derech Agav, and in Bava Metzia, he and the Rush both present slightly different formulations. In Bava Metzia, Tosas says, and it's really the Gemara, right? The Gemara asks, but Tosas says that you only say Yachloku, even though they're Mosak, when it's Efshar Lios Emes. When it's possible, that actually, not clearly one might be lying. Right? In Zelmer Anirakia, one of them might be lying, but it's possible that they both own the Beged. It's possible they both own the Beged. But the Mana Hashlishi, Tosa says, it's impossible that the Mana Hashlishi is divided between the two of them. Now, you'll tell me it's not impossible. How would it be possible for the Mana Hashlishi to be truly belong to both of them if, after all, the Nifkat knows that one of them gave him 200, one of them gave him 100? Think fast, Yoni. That's in exchange for your 50 and the extra 100. Okay? Now we each own 150. Okay. Now you can have your 50 back. Oh, man. Chloe. Me neither. So the bottom line, Tosa says, is it's not likely. People don't do that. Not that it's impossible. Exceedingly unlikely that someone was knocking there half of the Mana Hashlishi to the other guy when they didn't even have it with the other guy's hands. But two people holding onto a talus, it's perfectly conceivable they're both lying, that neither one wove it. It could belong to both of them. That's not a very satisfactory answer, because it's a very, like, how do you decide what's likely or not? If the Rush gives that formulation, it's a little better. The Rush says that you say Yachloku when they're both Mufzakim, unless we knew before they presented their tainas that it had to be one or the other, that it was Iyash and Liyash Hashem. How did we know? Because the Nifkat, who's in charge, knew that one person gave him 200, one person gave him 100. So before they opened up their mouths and basins to say, Kula Shali, Kula Shali, we already knew that it couldn't be Shel Shneim. It couldn't be both correct. By the Beged, two people walk into Beged and they're both holding it, it's perfectly possible that it belongs to both of them. only when they open their mouths and one says ani araktia and the other one says ani araktia, then all of a sudden you could say. So that's why Tosa says that in a case where it's efshar that both of them are, we know that it can't be shoshneim, and we knew that before they said anything. In such a case, you don't say yachloku. In such a case, it's established already before they even walk into the basin that belongs to one and not the other. In a case where we can't say that, they walk into the basin and they both present tainus and one is a liar, we just ignore what they have to say. And we say, because one of them's a liar, maybe both of them are liars, we ignore it. For us, we're concerned, it could both belong to both of them. But once we know before they even walk into the basin that it doesn't belong to both of them, we can't do yachloku. That's wrong. That's just plain simply wrong. So that's how Tosis and the Rush, and that's the main majority position in Rishonim, right? Which is that if you're not muchzak on it, called the Olam Gavah. If you're muchzak on it, so then if it's efshar lios emes, outside of your tainus of the two parties who clearly contradicting one another, then we say yachloku. If it's efshar lios emes, that the only case may be the man ashlishi, so then you himura hashriya v'liyah. Okay, Ellie.
Whether in this case applies only both lines,
or
they both say that I made it
and
it's only mine.
Correct. Is that correct? Yes. In other words, we're assuming it's, we don't know. Vana ikramai means one for sure is a liar. That doesn't mean that for sure one is telling the truth. So yes, it's predicated upon the Santosis is working with the assumption is, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If there's one liar, maybe there's another liar. So as long as it's possible to be true, we're just going to ignore their tainus and do yachloku because they're mosak. If they're not mosak, call the olam gavar. But once we can't ignore their tainus because we already know it only belongs to one of them, so then yachloku is going to perpetrate an injustice because we know, it's not possible that it belongs to both of them. Therefore, yehimun achachi avaliyah. If they're not mosak, and we know it's impossibly both of theirs, probably, I'm guessing Tosis would say, call the olam gavar because we just don't have to get involved. The problem is, Yachloku, when we're paskening the din, so then we bear responsibility if we get it wrong. If we say kol da'alam gavar, we're not paskening the din, we're just washing our hands of the matter. And Shevi El Pas is all this.
So a real concern then is that one person might be telling the truth, just to reframe it. Is it one person lying, both lying, whatever, but if one person really might, there's real concern that he's not lying, that's right. Because then we can't.
Because when you say one person might tell the truth, well, yeah, but do you know that one? What do you say?
Must
be telling the truth. Yes. Then the other one must be wrong, minimally speaking, if not lying. So that's the problem. Yes.
Right. One person wrong could be wrong. They also could both be wrong. It's much more problematic when one must
be right, and then automatically the other is wrong, and therefore to the yachloku would perpetrate an injustice. Okay, so that's Tosis's position. According to the Riva, just to review, says that it all depends upon whether or not there's Vadei Ramai. When there's no Vadei Ramai, we don't care who's holding it. If nobody's holding it, if they're both holding it. If there's no Vadei Ramai, so then Yachloku. But if there is a Vadei Ramai, so if we can, we wash our hands of it. If we can't, Yehei Munach. Meaning, if the Beis Din wasn't toe-faced to both, then they washed their hands of it. If the two people, the two litigants, are holding the talis and each one claims, Ani arag tiha, with his Vadei Ramai, kol da'olam gavar. They can go fight it out. When it's dealing with the Nifkat and the Mana Shlishi, that's like Beis Din being toe-faced, so in principle it should have been kol da'olam gavar, but because the Nifkat has a chiyav of Hashava, of returning it, he can't. And to put it out there into the public forum when this Vadei Ramai is, even though, again, it's possible that the person wins, but if the person loses, he hasn't done a Hashava. If the right person, assuming there's one right person there, if the right person doesn't win, then the Nifkat has not been Yotzei his obligation of returning the Pikadon. How do you know you have to return a Pikadon, by the way? What? Where?
Return it by the morning.
Now that's a mashkan. It is a pasuk, but the pasuk is not. Nah, I mean it's true that you could say the real answer might be lo sashokas reyacha, the lo sigzol. But the question, what is the definition of oshek? But we know that when a person swears falsely, owing another person money, they have to pay back with a chomesh or bring an asham. And the Torah says veishivas hagzela asher gazal, oes ha oshek asher asha, oes ha pikadon asher hafgadito. So presumably there was an obligation in the first place to return the pikadon. So I don't know if we have a more explicit pasuk than that, but. So you have an obligation to do, return the pikadon, even if you don't swear falsely. You're obligated in the first place to return the pikadon, but you have to know who to return it to, and you don't know who to return it to, and therefore if you return it to the wrong person, you haven't fulfilled your obligation of hashavas ha-pikadon. So that's why, in that case, you don't say kol, that in that case, even though there's vada ikaramah, you don't say kol da olim gavar. Right? The Riva has to explain why you don't say kol da olim gavar in that case. Tosis has to explain why you don't say Yachloku in that case. Okay. So far, right? Any questions so far? Yes, Gabe?
You were saying the story behind why we're willing to say Yachloku if it's possible that there's no Ramai, whereas we're not willing to say Yachloku if there's Vada Ramai, is because if it's Vada Ramai, then we're perpetrating injustice necessarily,
mm-hmm.
whereas if there's not necessarily am I, then it could be we're not portraying injustice, I suppose.
Right.
It still doesn't explain why we would want to split it versus doing something else, though. It's just saying that.
Well, because we want to split it because we have no way of resolving it otherwise. You could call it
the default is splitting.
Yeah.
And as long as we have everything not to split, that's what we're going to do.
I think so. Right? That is the way we kind of think, right? Those are two people came from a dispute. And they're both holding on to it, and it's not resolvable. If you get at the mystery, you would think, well, the logical thing to do is just split it, because what else are you going to do?
Is it because the Chacham agreed to some close when there's no Marakam, when there's no Moksach?
Yes. That's the point that Tosfos makes in the bottom of Lehem and Aleph. How could the Gemara cite this Mishnah in Bava Metzia as a Kasha, you know, because it says Yachloku, we don't pask in that way. We pask in Marakama. The answer is yes, because but in principle it's Yachloku. It's just that there's a Marakama, that's a different resolution mechanism. That's a Motzei Mecharvel Haraya, which Simchas has in a much more limited sense. Not at all, but he also has a, clearly Simchas doesn't say every case where there's any doubt. I don't think he denies the concept. It's in certain kinds of cases he denies it. Right? In other words, if you claim I owe you money and I claim you don't, you have to prove it. I don't think Simchas would dispute that point. Otherwise, that would be ridiculous. Otherwise, I, you know, go walk at the rate, say you owe me $1 million. You deny all of it. Okay, fine, we'll split it. That'd be ridiculous. So even Simchas obviously understands that nobody disputes the basic principle of Motzei Mechav Araya. But the question is, under certain circumstances, whether a genuine doubt has been created, so Simchas is more willing to say Yachloku than the Chacham more. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to think for a second. I mean, we're not going to finish this now because I really do want to think about how to fit this into the discussion we had on Monday about the nature of Cheskas Mammon, because I think that's what this machlokus is about, and it may tie into the machlokus that shows some nesivas in the next sugya. But just your preliminary thoughts about what is in the kudas machlokus. Why would Tosfos say that once they're both muhzakim on it, then essentially the default option has to be achloku, unless it's e'efshar li'yoshel shneim, like unless really this will be a travesty. Whereas for the Riva, being muhzak on it doesn't matter at all, it's irrelevant. I mean, it matters, the two litigants being muhzak on it is totally irrelevant. Right? A third party being muhzak might be relevant only because, not for yachloku purposes, but a third party being muhzak on it for the Riva matters for the decision tree of either Yehemunach versus Kol Da'olim Gavar. But Yachloku is not in the equation. I mean, it has nothing to do whatsoever. Being Mosak, in no way, both of being Mosak has no way contributes to Yachloku. Is that a reasonable question, I think? Eli Mela?
Yes. Is an attempt to in some way accurately divide it up among really don't know, so you think that's just how we're going to deal with something.
The problem I have with that. So again, you're saying Tosa says that you say achloku unless it's totally impossible, and the Riva, the Tosa, it's really a default option except for when impossible, and for the Riva, what? For the Riva, isn't that similar in a certain sense, that when ikaramai, we don't say vada ikaramai, we don't say achloku. Why? Because again, it's a different degree of messing things up, because the correct resolution can't be yachloku. In other words, they disagree when yachloku is viable. But I don't think that tells you, I don't think that the difference between those two, we could debate this point, I don't think the difference between those two is about what the nature of yachloku is. I think it's about the nature of the proof. In other words, for the Chachamim, to not say yachloku, it's only when it's yafshar, but provided that they're both muhsat on it. For the Riva, the muhsakas is irrelevant. He's much more focused on the possibility that you're achieving, he ignores the muhsakas. And he just thinks that if it's the Ramai, and now it's impossible, it seems that you're creating a miscarriage of justice. My real question is, why would Tosos, right, why for Tosos does being muhsak matter so much? Okay, well, you know what you're saying, mate, it still amounts to the same thing. So why, what is the indicator of the Matthias for Tosas? Ah. And for the Riva, what role does the fact that they're holding on to it play? Very little. Why? What's the difference? I would say that the Riva and Tosas look at being Muslim. So Tosas provides us a clue, I believe, in his language. What did Tosas say? Why did Tosas say that muhsakas matters? Look in Tosas. He says why.
Why did Riva say that?
Not, the Riva doesn't say why. What I think pushes the Riva away is not a starting point about discussing muhsakas. What pushes the Riva away is that the mana hashlishi, they're not muhsakim on. Tosas comes up with a chiddush and says, no, they are muhsakim because the nifkat's holding on to whoever it is, which is now for both of them. What, I'm sorry? Well, again, for Tosas, why does being, what does he say? Why does being muhsak matter? Ooh, that explains everything, doesn't it? Tosas says there's an anansa, almost an anansade. It's not quite an anansade, I shouldn't say it that way. But something like, it's like we know. We see them both holding it, therefore we assume, we know, that it belongs to both of them. And what is required to override that? Correct. In other words, when we have a chazaka that something is some way, a chazaka is a rebuttable presumption. Right, the chazaka milsa davidya gunde mishakri inshi, if I present you a sociopath who has no sense of shame, and I show you that he lies regularly on things that everybody knows are lies, so then the chazaka is overturned in his case. So Tosas basically says that anu yodim, when we see them holding it, we know. I would call it an anansade, it belongs to both of them. But an anansade is not edus mamish. Because if you have edus mamish, what does that mean? It means you can never overturn it. At best you can have a trey utrey, and it's a stalemate. But an ansade is an umdana. It's an assumption based upon what we assume to be highly probable based on what we see, but it's rebuttable. So if we know that it's efshar lios emes, it can't be both of theirs, so that overrides the ansade. But the fact that there's vaday or amai there, that doesn't tell us that they're not both owners. So for Tosfos, muhsakos is very, that chazaka is very powerful, being musaf on it. Ches kasamamon fitosos is a powerful indicator that it belongs to the person who's holding it. And it would seem that for the Riva, that's not the case. For the Riva, it's not the case. That just because you're holding on to it doesn't mean that we know that you own the part you're holding on to. I think that's what the Machlokas Tosas and the Riva is. It has to do with how we regard Cheskas Mamon. Yes, Eli Melech. Well, who are we talking about? The Riva? So all I'm going to tell you is that the Riva's starting point, I think, and again, textually I know how he arrives at it. I can't prove conceptually because he doesn't say, but at least in the first Riva, because the second version of the Riva may even shed light on the first one. But in the first version, he feels that Mosakas itself is not that relevant. What matters is, you know, whether or not we're dealing with a dishonest party here. If we're dealing with potentially two honest parties, if there's not Vaday Ramai, so then we like to judge favorably, and we'll divide it equally because maybe they're both telling the truth. Once we know that one is not telling the truth, so now we can no longer take the approach of Yachloku. Now, again, even though it's possible that the outcome will be just, but we're already too suspicious, because one of them is the Ramai, and that already makes us think, okay, Yachloku can't be the right thing here. But we don't know which one is the Ramai. So, Kol Dalam Gavar. Unless we've taken possession of him, in which case, then we can't allow injustice to happen on our watch, and Yehimu Nechachi Yav Eliyahu. But for Tosas, the Cheskas Mamon accomplishes something. The Cheskas Mamon says that even though we know we have a liar here, it's irrelevant. The Cheskas Mamon tells us that this belongs to both of them, until we know that that cannot be the case. It's an Anan Sade, essentially, until Iyav Shalios Shoshnehem. At that point, the Anan Sade gets thrown out the window, and since we have nothing to go on, we will say Kol Da'alim, we'll say, if they're Muchsak, we'll say Yehi Munach, and if they're not Muchsak, then we don't want to get involved with you. Go fight it out between the two of you, because we're not interested. Ephraim. What would he? I don't know what the Riva would say. That's the Gemara. That's the Gemara, actually. You know, each one. In other words, the din of Shnayim Ochzim is if they're both holding on to the edge of the talus, so then we say Achloku. Once they're holding on to, if I'm holding on 3/4 of the way, you know, a half the way, and you're holding on 1/4 of the way, the parts that we're each holding that are in our hands, you don't say you don't say Yachloku. We each get what we're holding on to in our hands. And then we split the rest, and the Bishvua, we split the rest, and the Machlokas HaRishonim, whether you need a Shvua on the parts that you're also holding. Are you asking me, how would the Riva relate to that Umdana, meaning the parts that are Tachas Yadcha? I don't know. I don't know. It's not, I don't see him address it here, and I don't think the Beis Yosef quotes anything in Simon Kuf Lamed Ches when he talks about it. I doubt it. In other words, you're suggesting that maybe the Riva would agree that certain kinds of Cheskas Mamon would be treated as Anan Sadeh, but not this one. The problem is that he just uses the term Shneim Muchsakim. Right? My understanding is that conceptually speaking, the Shneim Muchsakim at the edges and each holding onto the two part are not conceptually different. It's just physically. In other words, we're both holding just the edges, then, you know, it's split the territory in the middle. If we're each holding on to some part, so split the territory in the middle. Right? The fact that we're both holding on at the edge equally means that we have that it suggests that we both have a chelik in this talus. So maybe it's joint up. if our hands move closer, that just means that what's under my hand is clearly mine because on my side. What's on your end is on your side. And in between, we're both holding out the edges, so it's split. So I don't assume. I know you could make a distinction. Certainly those Rishonim who say, you have to look at the Gemara, you see where the Machlokas comes from, but I think the Shulchan Aruch certainly paskins. Again, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, whether you take a shul on the parts that you're actually tafos on. But if you do, then fundamentally speaking, I don't see it as being any different. If you say that there's no shul on that part, then you'd have a stronger argument to argue the two different kinds of Machlokas. In other words, what you're saying really is that it's not that the Rivadas and treasure the Cheskas Mamon here, it's just that he argues because you're not actually holding it, maybe you're not so Mochsok on it quite the same way. That's where you're going, which is possible. Okay. Okay, so that is the Rivadas. Yes. Ben?
Just going off that point for 1 second. Does the reality of Shized Notel Ad Makom Shizav Mega Ed, does the Notel Ad Makom Shizav Mega Ed motivate the desire not to rule Yakobu because it's going to further exacerbate the inequality of the potential wrong decision?
I don't think so. I think it's maybe the answer is yes, in that it seems that when we assume that which is really under your hands is yours. Right? We always want to get to the right decision. We don't want to perpetrate something that's wrong. I just think that the assumption is that which I'm holding on to is more likely to be mine, or is assumed to be mine. Pick your formulation. So the original case now for the palace, I'm each holding the edges. So you can't claim that I'm more toughest on this part of the palace than you are. We're kind of an equal, you know, and so much so, by the way, the Gemara says, supposing you have gold on one side of the palace, let's say you have an atara on one side, that party can't claim the gold is on my side. He says, let's just divide it down the middle. No, we divide it this way. In other words, being holding onto the edges of the palace, but not mamish in your hands, you know, that which is not in your hands, you have a relationship with, but it's not the same thing as that which you hold under your hands. In other words, holding on to the question is, does that mean substantially it's a different kind of muchzakus? Or does it simply mean that once I'm holding onto the fringe of the talus, that which is in my hand is mine, but the only reason I have muchzakus on the rest of the talus is because if no one else were holding it, I could pull the whole thing. But now that two of us are holding it, we could each pull the whole thing, so we're both equally... I would say that the fact that you're... There is a difference between the two, but I'm not sure that it's a conceptual difference. In other words, the parts that are under my hand, whether I have to take a shul or not, are assumed to be mine. I am muchzakus on. The rest of the talus, it's not that I'm muchzak on half and you're muchzak on half. It's that we're both muchzak on the whole part that's in between. But that may not indicate that it's a different kind of muchzakus. It may just indicate that the reason why I'm muchzak is why I'm considered muchzak on, I'm not holding it. The answer is because if I'm holding this piece of paper, but I can control the whole thing, which is something that comes up in the Gemara. Right? I'm holding on to this thing, and I can pull the whole thing. Well, my shlita continues over that. It's just if you're holding it, then we're the only two who can pull it. But it might still be the same mosakis. It's just, you know, the fact that we divide this kind of randomly, you know, whichever way is fair, not down the middle, is simply because my relationship to this is based upon holding any edge of the talus. So, but I can't say that I'm more muchzak on this part than you are muchzak on this part. We're equally muchzak on that part. But it still might be that it's still the same muchzakus. It's just that one is singular and one is joint.
Is that dependent on your legitimate claim to it, or is that just simply dependent on your gevar?
It's a physical state. It's just right now this muchzakus is what Tosfos is talking about when he says that anu yodim, that the kevan that when they're both ochzin ilu anu yodim sheish hashem chelek ba. It's just a physical observation. Is that it? Okay.
So we're saying that according to Rebbe Kanano, Chazaka Talos could be onerous. I mean, the being Mosheh Talos would be onerous.
Yes.
Whereas
So the Chazak itself doesn't tell you that. Look, of course the Chazak. Look, if I walk into Beis Din, Riva Grisha, I walk into Beis Din holding it, nobody else, I can claim it's mine. But the question is, how powerful is the fact that I'm holding on to it in terms of establishing my ownership on it? Especially when it's two people holding on to it. So one could have said, in effect, well, if two people are holding on to it, well, nobody's holding on to it. Or we don't know. But Tosa says, adarabha, when two people are holding on to it, so then we know they both have a chelak in it, as opposed to we don't know. That's, I think, really the difference between Tosas and the Riva.
So it's not about how Chazaka works. It's not going about whether it's a Biru or Hanaga.
Well, it might actually be. That's the question I want to explore. In other words, if you assume it's a Biru, I understand Tosas' position much more. Why? The fact that once they're both Mosakim, so that tells us that that's not just a default. That tells us that they both own it. And the only way to override that is when I have evidence to override them. It's basically an Anan Sade, the Cheskas Mamoni, the Tata de Mosakim, that each is Mosak on the talus, tells us that it belongs to both of them. And the only way to override that Chazaka, that Anan Sade, is to have evidence. Evidence is, it's Yevshel B'Yoshoshvim, so I know that this Anan Sade is wrong, because one of them, for sure, it can't be. I mean, maybe I know it's with Afu and Afed, but I don't know which one. Whereas for the Riva, that doesn't seem to matter. Right? For the Riva, the fact that I'm Mosak, and it's possible that it could even be true. It's actually Yosemis. But that doesn't matter. Because if there's a Ramai, and I'm concerned about that, I'm not going to say Yachlug. So why not use the Cheskas Mamon to be Machriya? There's a Vaday Ramai, but it might be belongs to both of them. The Cheskas Mamon is not enough. It seems to me that he, in this case at least, he regards the Cheskas Mamon as being weaker than Tosis regards it. That's why, aside from textual reasons, that's why he says it makes no difference whether they're Ochasim.
Weaker mean acting differently? Could it still be a beer, or is
it
just weaker?
Okay, so you know, now we're going to quibble over it, but I think at a certain point, you know, how weak does it get till we say it doesn't really tell us anything? And but it might give us guidance on what to do because we have no better way of doing it. Okay, so I guess I spilled most of the beans already, but that's okay because I extracted it. Now, so I think further highlight the second shita. Put aside the questions that Tosis asks for the moment on the first shita. I guess in the interest of thoroughness, we go back and read them. But for the moment, let's just look to the... I want to first describe what the Riva shita is, and then we can talk about how it differs from the second one and what that might tell us. Three wide lines, full wide lines for the end of Tosis. Continue game. The Ode Perish Riva.
I was skipping it.
Skip the questions. I know. Okay, so let's help figure out what the Riva Shita is. He says, okay, you know what? I agree that when they're Oksin, even if it's Ramah Yechloko. So how does he differ then from Tosis Shita? So it explains why, firstly. It explains why Shnaim Ochsim Betalas. Even if we were to say Vada Ikaramai, what would be, do we have another example? What's the other example? Shnaim Ochsim. I don't know if we have another example, but he would say, yes. You want to know why Shnaim Ochsim Betalas is different than Ahu Arva? Because he's Mochsak. Okay. But that's only if you're Mochsak. If you're not, if they're not Shnaim Mochsak, then what would the din be? He doesn't spell it out, but you have to spell it out for me. I get it. Shnaim Ochsim Betalas, it doesn't matter if they say Ani Araktia, or they say Ani Mitzasiya, Ani Mitzasiya. Either way, Yachloku, because they're Mochzakim on it. What then is, how does he differ from Tosos? This took me a while to kind of figure it out. This was a little bit confusing. I might be forced, if not today, if the next Monday, if we finish up and review, to make a chart for you. Yeah, Gabe?
I understand that he's not presenting a third shita. He's just elaborating on his own shita.
No, he can't. It has to be a third shita. He said, in his first presentation, the Riva said that if even if you're Mosa, if there's Vada Ikaramai, you don't say Achloku. You would say, in this case of the Shnaim Ochsin, Yehemunah, probably. Well, I'm sorry, you would just tell them to go fight it out. Right? The basin is not holding it, probably. In this teretz, he says no. If the shnayim ochsin, even the ones vade ramai, zera akia, so the Rival would say, still yachlok. So where does, how does he differ from Tosfos? This took me a while, but it's really mapping it out. So the Rival would say, for Tosfos, if they're not ochazin, what is the din? If there's no achiza, called the olim gavar. What would the Rivas say if they're not ochazim?
Depends on whether it's
ramai. So Gabe, you tell me. If there's no ramai, what's the din? And if there is ramai,
or
Yehimunach. Or Yehimunach. According to Tosfos, if they're not ochzin, kol da'olam gavar. Unless, right, I would say kol da'olam gavar. Unless maybe Beis Din was tofes, then they can't do that. Now, remember that the mana hashlishi for Tosfos is shnayim ochzin. I mean, they're both holding it. Except for you can't do yachloku there because it's yachshul yosemes. But for the Riva, no, they're not considered a holding on to it. That was another different nekudas, different machlokas. Whether or not the nifkat holding a disputed mana is considered their mochzakim or not. That itself requires a word of comment. In a moment, I just want to explain that particular piece, what I think is going on there. But for the Riva, if they are not ochzim, if it's novadai ramai there, you don't say kol da'olam gavar, you say yachloku. If there's a vadai ramai, then you say kol da'olam gavar, if it's not in our possession. And if it is in our possession, you say yehimunach hachiyav eliyah. Now, what that point in the Rivai thing highlights is a concession to Tosus's view on cheskas mamon. Say you're right, Tosus. One shneim mochzakim, I can't really argue with you, because the shneim mochzakim on a yogim that is shel shoshneim, unless it can't be shel shoshneim. My issue with you is only the not mochzakim, where you assume that it always goes to called olam gavar, and I'm telling you that's not true. That still we say yachloku, unless there's vada yikar amati. Okay. So let me. Are there any questions so far on that? Gabe, go ahead.
What's motivating him to say this?
What's that?
What's motivating him to say this?
What's motivating the Rivat to say it? He doesn't tell us. And he does. Shnayim ochsim b'shtar. Shnayim ochsim b'shtar. So, they're both holding a shtar. There's Vaday Aramai there. Now, there's a Malva and the Lover holding the shtar. Malva says, you didn't pay me back. It's my shtar. Lvovah said, I did pay you back. It's my shtar. So the halacha is machlokas. But he's asking, I think, from the question of yachloku. The Gemara actually asked the kasha from Rebbe. The Gemara, Rebbe says, you give it to the Malva, if not mistaken, but the Gemara has a whole funny peirush on that. Why? Technical consideration within shtaros and so on. But Rabbi Shimon Leil says, Yachloku. So the Rivas says, look, in principle, you say Yachloku, even though it is a Vadei Ramai. But they're Muchzakim, they're Shnei Madukim Bishar. So that's probably what motivates him to say so. But what I don't remember, the Ramban, I don't remember addressing what you do with that. How do you deal with that, Gemara? Okay, but that's what he does, yeah.
Keeping everything he said before, he's just modifying it slightly?
Well, yes, but if you say slightly, and I would argue it's a major modification. Because in the previous discussion, Mosakis mattered not at all for the revised. Totally irrelevant. Now all of a sudden, no, but Mosak is very relevant if you're Mosak. Because then even though there's a Vadei Ramai, Yachloku. And he presumably would be motivated to Tosas that if it's Yesh or Yosemes, that you would say Yehim Unach.
Well, he said,
still lobbed off the oksin. You don't have to be oksin to say achogu. It's just that
correct.
If you are oksin, then you will always say achogu.
Correct. Correct. And he says that sha'ar is not considered oksin. So I just want to explain briefly, it's the last thing I'm going to say for now. Why does he disagree with Tosis? What's that machlokas about? So I just want to, just an opportunity to do chazar on something I think I mentioned in Shir, but you should really, this is one of these key yesodos in Choshen Mishpat. It's Rabbi Yochanan's Memra. If I steal money from somebody, but they don't have geyush, neither one can be maftish. Why? Zemet neshen shalov, zemet neshen b'shusa. But the halacha is that if you're holding on to me, Rami, if you're holding on to pikadon for me, I can be maftish to pikadon. Why? Why not say it in a b'shusa? The answer is because it is in my rishus. You're my shomer. Unless you deny, unless you claim it's yours, if you're tofer in this metaltalim in this pikadon, then I can't be maftish because now by my word you're a gazlan. You know, according to me, according to you, it's yours. So in other words, right now we don't know the facts, but I can't be machdish something that's in your rishus that you claim is yours. Even if it turns out in the end to be mine and I win it back in a court case, it won't be hektish. I have to be machdish it again. Because at the time I was machdish it, it wasn't birshusi. It might have been mine, which it turns out it was mine, but it wasn't birshusi. That's why, the real din that this explains is why if I pick up an aveda, and then the bainlim have yeyosh, why can't I keep the object? Why does yeyosh have to take place before you pick up the Aveda? The answer is because once I pick up the Aveda, a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Safar or a Shomer Chinuch, but I'm a Shomer for the Baal Aveda. And therefore, Yeish doesn't work for Shosainim. Why? Because when I'm watching something on whoever's behalf, whether I know it or not, so I am considered it's considered an Ereshus. The question the Machlokas are Rishonim is how to apply that to this case. Right, the nifkad is the shomer for whomever gave him the extra mana. The problem is he doesn't know. But the truth is when I pick up an aveda, I also don't know who it belongs to. But the difference is that by the, so of course Tosfos should be right. But the difference is that by the aveda, it's not in dispute, it's just a lack of knowledge. Here, there's a lack of knowledge, but I know which two people, and both those people argue who gave me the mana. So that may be a situation that because I can't give it back to either one, because it's unknowable for me right now. In other words, if they show up, and one of them shows up and says, give it to me, and I don't remember it's yours, if you can't get it back from the shomer, then it's not bershusha. It doesn't matter if you can't get it back from the shomer, the Rival would say, because the shomer is lying and denying it, or because the shomer doesn't know whether he's allowed to give it to you, so the Rival says it's the same thing. And Tosis would say that no, that as long as the shomer is not withholding it for himself, the shomer is watching it for whomever it belongs to. And therefore, it's still considered b'shus bainim, even though we don't know who the bainim are. Okay. Any questions? Okay, so tomorrow is going to be the kias, followed by shir lunch. Monday, I want to sort of wrap this up. I want to do chazar. We have to read the Ramban a little bit in Bava Metzia, but I really want to wrap up this part of the sugya, and then I don't have the chance on Monday. I hope, if not Monday, then on Tuesday, Sunday will be the kias again, and then Monday... And then Tuesday, I would like to get through that machlokas of Tosis and the Sivos, because I think it might be related to the machlokas Tosis and the first shita of the Riva. Okay.